I'll be reading from John chapter 10, verses 11 through 18. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father.
The Lord is my shepherd is a verse, is a saying, and has been a comfort to countless people over many centuries of time. The Lord is my shepherd goes back a long ways. It is an image that comes well before the time of Jesus. Moses was a shepherd for his father-in-law. David was a shepherd boy who later became a king. And so if you lived during those days, you knew plenty more about sheep than most of us do, and about the everyday habits of sheep, and a shepherd's way of dealing with sheepy habits. The Lord is my shepherd was a very potent image in its day. The Lord is my shepherd. When we hear that now, when we say it, we are, of course, using a metaphor, a word picture that tells us something about God. For the Lord is not literally a sheep herder, but something about the Lord is like what a shepherd does. What a shepherd is really like, that is how a metaphor works. The Lord is my shepherd. If you grew up in Brooklyn or Boston or North Philly, or spent your entire life in a city like Baltimore or LA, or if you lived your entire 60 years in the streets of the Bronx, the only live sheep you may have ever seen would have been at picture books or in the Bronx Zoo, with a zookeeper keeping them. And does a zookeeper do the same thing that a shepherd does? The Lord is my shepherd will make more sense to some than to others. And for good measure, if the Lord is indeed my shepherd, well, what does that make us? Does it make us like sheep? Is there something about us that mimics sheep behaviors? Well, hello and how do you do to biblical metaphor? Moving on. I'm not sure how Jesus would have said it had he lived in Brooklyn or in the streets of Chicago's South Side, but what Jesus did say in his day, in his era, was that he was the good shepherd. And the listeners got it quickly. It computed to them. Jesus had this way of pulling forward the history into the present. Most of Jesus' hearers would have immediately understood the Moses connection, for Moses was one of their heroes. And the same with David, shepherd boy David, who had become king, leader David. David was another one of their heroes from the past. Good shepherds they were in the minds of the hearers. Now Jesus is saying it about himself. I am one of those. I am the good shepherd. And I wonder what that conjures up in our minds in 2018, if all is good with a shepherding job. As most of you know, and I know I've said this before, but I spent a good part of my life as a dairy farmer. And so there was this one beautiful July summer day on a beautiful, clear, and sunny late morning when I was raking second cutting hay in a rather long field that paralleled a long public dirt road, a field that also paralleled a lake 1 mile long below. And this lake was filled with cabins and with people in them whom we called Lakers. And so there I was one day, raking along with the summer breeze in my face, bouncing along in my cabless tractor, when this Laker guy stopped his car and got out and came walking towards me. We yakked for about 10 minutes, most of it him regaling me how lucky I was to be a farmer, with nothing better to do than to drive around on my tractor on such a sunny day as this, and that he wished that he could become a farmer too. That fresh air and this unhurried pace of life seemed like a dream job to him. How might he get started, he asked me in all seriousness, and I bit my tongue and simply said, "Well, sir, not every day is like this sunny day, a nice one like this," and we left it at that. It is possible to hear Jesus saying, "I am the good shepherd," and immediately we go to the card rack of a Lifeway bookstore and buy a card with a shepherd, a clean and neatly coiffed shepherd with a little lambkin on his shoulder, a perfectly clean lamb draped on the shoulder's spotless garment. And it is a nice card, but the card like that remind me of Laker guy, and how we may not be getting the full view of a shepherd's life on a card. Let me pick on my daughter Becky for a minute. And by the way, she's coming here shortly, and she doesn't have to know about this. Becky's early years, of course, were on our dairy farm. Her formal training, though, is in early childhood education, and so when their daughters were born, Isis and Eliza, she made the decision to leave the classroom and stay at home with them. Eventually, she and her husband, Chris, who, by the way, is a builder, eventually they bought a house with a few acres of land. And this is the place where Becky's farming and teaching are beginning to clash. Becky wants her daughters to know where their food comes from, that it comes from gardens, and that you go to the garden and you harvest it. And the girls become helpers. She wants her daughters to have responsibilities, sometimes called chores, the teacher in her, that you raise some of your food. And so Chris built a small chicken coop with 6 chickens that were bought. This was the farmer in her. And Isis and Eliza take turns with the feeding and the egg collecting duties, and closing the door to the coop after the free-ranging chickens are roosted for the day. But one day, only 5 chickens came home to roost, and she noticed predators like hawks in the sky, and so they got a dog, a blue heeler, to help guard the chickens against the hawks and other such varmints that might be a bother to her birds. And Tilly the dog is a natural herder and got a little aggressive with the herding, and then there were 4 chickens. Welcome to farming, Beck, I thought, but you keep these thoughts to yourself when you're a dad. Well, several acres more are more than enough space for 4 chickens, and so another little structure was built and 2 baby goats were bought. And there was further talk of a pig for pork and a beef cow for beef, and it was noticed that Tilly the dog might be better behaved if she had another dog to cavort with. And so Bennett was bought, and Bennett is a mountain cur, which is a working breed dog. And probably because it did not yet know what its dog work was, it waylaid one of the goats. And so the girls were learning even more lessons about sadness and about blood and injury and bite marks. And since they were now down a goat, and since goats themselves are rather social creatures, their single goat began to get a little stir crazy and weird acting. And so another goat was sought on Facebook and bought, and shortly thereafter I got this text picked from a beautifully birthed baby goat. Still in its slime, still in mucus nose, but the baby goat, though a welcome addition, only lived a couple days. And now they had a mama milking goat and nowhere to go with the milk. And Chris, with his tongue in his cheek, said, "Maybe it's time for the pig." And my farmer gray brain keeps thinking, welcome to farming, Rebecca Rose Long. See, this scripture lesson from John is not really meant for a Lifeway greeting card. It's not. Listen to the language of what a shepherd does. They put their life on the line. They are aware of hirelings, those who have no real connection, no skin in the game in the first place, who are more likely to run away at the first sign of trouble. And then there is the wolf snatching to guard against with a beater stick in the corner. Good shepherd does not mean photogenic shepherd. It means blood, sweat, and tears. It means hanging your clothes in a separate room because they are stained with blood and sweat and tears and stink. Which might very well be the difference between hobby shepherd and good shepherd. A good shepherd cares for everyone, cares to the point of putting their life on the line, that much, cares that much.
Hear the scripture from 1 John 3, starting at verse 16. We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another. How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's goods and sees a brother or sister in need and yet refuses to help? Little children, let us love not in word or speech, but in truth and action. And by this we will know that we are from the truth and will reassure our hearts before him whenever our hearts condemn us. For God is greater than our hearts, and he knows everything. Beloved, if our hearts do not condemn us, we have boldness before God, and we receive from him whatever we ask, because we obey his commandments and do what pleases him. And this is his commandment, that we should believe in the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another just as he has commanded us. All who obey his commandments abide in him, and he abides in them. And by this we know that he abides in us, by the Spirit that he has given us.
The gospel lesson from John we heard read earlier to us had Jesus quotes in it. I am the good shepherd is what Jesus said about himself. He said it before Easter. He said it before the resurrection. That reading we heard earlier was a before Easter reading. But as we have promised ourselves here during our after Easter worship Sundays, we will want to be looking at post-resurrection scripture lessons, after Easter scriptures. The scripture that we just now heard this morning is from a tiny book near the backs of our Bibles called 1 John. This tiny book of about 5 pages is sometimes called a letter, sometimes it is called a sermon, because the style of it is sermonic. It was written somewhere in the vicinity, it is believed, around 100 AD, which would make it about 60 to 70 years post-resurrection. And of course, it would be an understatement to say that the times back then were different than they are now. The world does keep on spinning. It does not stand still. Time keeps moving along. Last week, I mentioned the influence that Plato had on general thinking in those days, that our physical bodies were held in low regard, and that it was purified souls that were regarded with greater value back then. So went the thinking. And so then last week, we said that Jesus led with his scars, scars that still pockmarked his resurrected flesh, and that Jesus still got hungry even after his resurrection from the dead. We also suggested last week that our own bodies have value, at least in the Jesus way of thinking. And because of the times in which 1 John was written, there was this widely held belief that Jesus really didn't come down to earth in flesh, because Plato had said, after all, flesh is no good, it's caca. Flesh and blood, they no work. It was thought by some that Jesus must have come to earth in a perfected spirit of some sort, a kind of Jesus hologram, I suppose, a heavenly 3D image cavorting about the earth. You could see it, but it had no real flesh and blood. For sure, it must have been a heavenly 3D image with superior knowledge come down to earth. Hologram Jesus. Flesh bad, Jesus good. That was the only way some early Christians could think about Jesus. And so, like we said last week, it's no small thing for Jesus to offer his scarred flesh to his disciples for inspection. Go ahead, he had said, touch it. Touch my flesh scars. Go ahead. But the world of back then was very different from ours in another way, too. Think church. Think Bible. And around 100 AD, there was no Vatican. There was no centralized church structures. They had not yet been developed. There was no Christian broadcasting network to tap into. Denominations hadn't been thought up yet. Mennonites were still a whopping 1,400 years away. When 1 John was written, it was a very different world. And can we imagine a back then world of churches that did not have a finished Bible as we know it? At the time when the important letters that Paul wrote, like Romans and Ephesians and Corinthians and Galatians, were not yet Bible books, but were important letters that circulated among churches, circuit letters carried to and fro and back by couriers that became so valuable, so weathered, so dog-eared from all that passing back and forth between churches that they were later preserved for all of us down through the centuries to this very day. We still have them. And we still use the anciently circulated 1 John 3 sermonic letter even to this day. And when 1 John 3 was written, before the Vatican had become central, before denominations had sprouted, even before the Bible was fully completed, people of those times were heavily influenced by church VIPs. And I don't mean that in a negative big shot sort of way. I do not. Sometimes these VIPs were called apostles. Sometimes they were called elders. Traveling VIPs like Paul were enormously important messengers for the early church. We can actually get a flavor of this early church functioning in 1 Corinthians 1, where people were saying, I buy into what Paul was telling us. Other people were saying, I think what Apollos tells us is true. And others were saying, yeah, I'm sort of following along with Peter. And Paul was trying to correct that notion. Follow Jesus, he said. Follow the Good Shepherd. Church VIPs were the norm of their day. And so here is another one of those, VIP John, writing and circulating this letter, this sermon, among his churches, any number of John-style churches, telling them about Jesus' death and his resurrection. Listen to how he's doing it. We know love by this, that Jesus laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another. That is shepherd language. Not the sanitized shepherd off a Lifeway greeting card, but a caring shepherd that'll do just about anything for his flock of sheep, risking blood and sweat and tears and wolves. That kind of good shepherd laid down his life, and it says we should too. And we might be okay with that, for we already know that we are not Jesus, and atonement theories are not built around our blood. But John's sermon does not seem to be worried about that, for he says to his circuit of scattered churches, we know love this way, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another. That. John said that. How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's good and sees a brother and sister in need and yet refuses to help? Listen, children, let us love not in word or speech or belief, but in truth and in action. Remember, John is talking like that because many people of his day very much believed in hologram Jesus. Hologram Jesus that came with no flesh and no blood, but with a superior bucket of perfected knowledge to draw from. And John, in his sermon letter, is saying, no, 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 no. Jesus laid down his flesh and blood for us all, and we should do the same. Lay down our flesh and blood lives for one another. This is how we abide. This is how we love. It is not just a sparkly, clean, heavenly idea worth circulating. It's more of a blood, sweat, and tears activity. Not word or speech, but in truth and action-oriented love. This sermonic letter from John is a short one. It's around 2,516 words all told, if you're counting. If the whole little book of 1 John were read aloud, if it were preached aloud, it would take about 20 minutes, but it's packed pretty tight. It would be nice if more were spelled out for us, what exactly laying down our lives for one another actually means. It would be nice if there were at least a list to work off of, but nothing is spelled out, nothing at all. If we were to do a pronoun check of 1 John, there would be a few, only a few, first-person singulars. There is the word anyone. There are a few first-person pronouns in this scripture. But most of the pronouns in 1 John are plurals, like we and us. There is a lot of we-ing and us-ing going on, which may have a message for us in our present time who currently live in individualistic mode. Our churches are built around individualism. And since the plural pronoun-infused letter was first written to churches, maybe it begs the 2018 question, what kind of church will we be? What does a lay down one's life for another church begin to look like? It's after Easter, and these Easter scripture lessons are now in front of us, and the details of this one are sparse. And maybe that's by design. Maybe that's the genius of this scripture lesson, that love is both beautiful and costly. And maybe we will only see the beautiful side of love when a good dose of sacrifice has been lavished on us, and we return the favor by paying it forward.